Good evening. Good to see so many people out tonight. As I promised this morning, we're going to be talking about the 10 plagues of Egypt. Tonight, by request, we're going to study what lesson I have called Against All the Gods of Egypt, taking our text from Exodus 12 and verse 12, but as you'll see, really the text goes from Exodus 7 on through chapter 12. But actually, Exodus 12:12, we're going to be reading that just very shortly. So it tells us that God said he was going to execute judgments on all the gods of Egypt. So what this looks like is God versus Pharaoh and Egypt's pantheon of gods. God told Isaiah in Isaiah 46 and verse 9. He said, "Remember the former things long past, for I am God and there is no other. I am God and there's no one like me." One of the things through Isaiah that he's reminding his people of in his day, one of the things that he says, "Remember the former things long past, for I am God," is his bringing them out of Egypt by a very mighty hand. God was reminding Judah in the time of Isaiah that he had the power, reminding them of the power that he displayed throughout the land of Egypt in bringing Israel out of Egypt and forming them into a nation. We find in Exodus chapter 1 and verse 8 that Pharaoh rose up that did not know Joseph. And so he didn't know where these people had come from, just that they were innumerable. So he enslaved the Israelites living in the land since they'd been living there since the days of Joseph. This was to fulfill what God said to Abraham would happen in Genesis 15, 13 to 16. As he's telling Abraham, he's going to give him the land of Canaan. He says, but first, your descendants are going to go to Egypt. They're going to be enslaved for 400 or so years. And then I'm going to bring them out and bring them back to this land. So the exciting part of this time period is it's the fulfillment to the promise made to Abraham that's about to happen. Egypt worshipped a pantheon of gods, and in many cases, multiple gods for the same thing. I hope you got the handout for tonight. It's going to serve as kind of the outline of sorts that talks about the different plagues and the gods that it executed judgment on. And it's by nowhere exhaustive. There are so many gods, we only have so much time. But the point that we're going to be looking at tonight is the power that God displayed. Sometimes, for those of us growing up in the church, the 10 plagues is something we've heard all our lives in children's stories. It's what we heard in Sunday Bible school. It's way more than just a kids' class. And as adults, sometimes we need to go back and look over these things with adult eyes and see the absolute devastating nature of these 10 plagues and how they rocked and brought Egypt to its knees. And why that we can read later in Psalm chapter 105, verse 36, that Egypt was glad to see Israel go because their dread had fallen upon them. We're going to find out why did the dread of these slaves come upon Egypt, that they were happy to see their forced labor leave. And in fact, they were so happy, they let them plunder them. They gave them gifts of gold and silver, just saying, "Get out as fast as you can carry them." Why did that happen? And that's what we're going to be looking at tonight. The 10 plagues of Egypt are well known, but they're not random. And I want to say from the very beginning, because I may not have time to say it as we get going, these are not natural phenomena. These are supernatural things that God sent against Egypt. In some cases, he points out that they are going to see something that no one had ever seen before. In some cases, he's going to say this is going to be told for generations to know the power that is displayed. They are direct insults, challenges, and judgments from God on the gods of Egypt, and on Pharaoh himself, for even he, at this time period, was worshipped as a god of Egypt. He had his own drawings. He had those gods that represented Pharaoh. He had his own drawing that you could find in the caves or the tombs of the kings, and find that even Pharaoh himself was worshipped as a deity. But in Exodus chapter 7 and verse 4, in Exodus chapter 10 and verse 2, twice God says he would make mockery of the Egyptians. But I want us to begin our reading this evening in Exodus 12 and verse 12. As God is getting ready to commit the 10th plague against Egypt, he says, "For I will go through the land of Egypt on that night, and will strike down all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast. And against all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgments. I am the Lord." We can look over in Numbers chapter 3 and verse 4 where it simply states after the fact, he executed judgment on all their gods. The plagues affected the Egyptians' physical senses as well as their hearts with constant reminders that God and God alone, Yahweh, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, was far superior to any of their gods. In fact, God will exercise power over their people and nation at will, while the Egyptian people and their gods remain helpless to stand against him. At one point, his magi, Pharaoh's magi, are going to tell him, this is the finger of God. At another point, they're going to say, why won't you relent? Can't you see the land is destroyed? And yet, Pharaoh hardens his heart time and time again, so that God will exercise his power against them. In Isaiah 46 in verse 9, as we read earlier, God reminds his people saying, I am God and there is no other. No more powerful part of Scripture can we read that as we can in Exodus, as God tells Pharaoh what he's going to do ahead of time and does it in advance, with advance warning. There's nothing they can do to stop it. God exercised power over their people time and again. Moses was chosen to lead God's people out of Egypt, but it was the power of God that demonstrated to all the people, Egyptian and Israelite alike, that there is one God. God executed judgment against all the gods of Egypt. So let's go back to the first plague. Exodus chapter 7, 14 through 25. We don't have time to read these, but what I would like to do is look over in Psalm 105. If you place a marker there in Exodus, because we'll come back to that. We'll come back to Exodus periodically as we talk about this. But look over in Psalm 105 and verse 29, where it says, he turned their waters into blood and caused their fish to die. Here the psalmist, I mentioned this morning that four different psalms mention the Exodus out of Egypt. As Psalm 78, Psalm 105, briefly stated in Psalm 135 and Psalm 136. What I want us to do is we're going to look at some companion places in Psalm 105. So if you have a marker or want to use your finger or a pen, keep a marker there in Psalm 105 as we'll come back and read some short accounts, reminders of what God did. But why was this important? The Nile was the heartbeat, it was the lifeline of Egypt. It was considered to be the very source of Egypt's power. Not only was the Nile affected, but when God struck the waters of Egypt that made it turn to blood, not only from the Nile, but even their water drawn from wells or already stored in jars for use turned to blood. It says that there was an odor that was so bad it kept them from drinking it. It was so bad it killed the aquatic life that was in the Nile. Turning the water to blood killed the aquatic life. It threatened the crops. It smelled so bad they wouldn't drink it. And this judgment lasted 7 days. A full week without drinkable water struck this land. And yet, Pharaoh didn't soften his heart. Even that, a week of non-drinkable water that was killing the land, wasn't enough. But this was a judgment on the many gods that are worshipped in association to the Nile. And I don't want to get bogged down in the details. Sometimes I have a tendency to do that. But that's not the point. Tonight I want you to look at the different gods that man created in man's own image and told Egypt, this is your God. And God saying, I'm going to make a mockery of the Egyptians. I'm going to execute judgment against all their gods. Num was the guardian of the Nile. His form was a man with curly-horned ram's head, sometimes a bull's, but usually a ram's is depicted here with curly horns. He's one of the earliest Egyptian deities. He was worshipped to the 2nd or 3rd century AD. Think about that. He was so popular all the way to the times of the Romans, Num was still being called on by many different peoples, not just the Egyptians. He's said to be the god that created the human body. And what will come in play later on against Num is it's also said he created children on a potter's wheel. And then there's Happy. I say Happy. I listened to this on Google to find out if I'm saying it right. And the guy kept saying Happy. I'd never heard it pronounced that way. So Happy, Happy, either way, they call him the spirit of the Nile. Happy was the god of the annual Nile flooding. So he's not the god of the Nile. He's the god of the annual Nile flooding. And he's referred to as the Lord of the fishes, birds, and marshes. And his form was a man with a large belly and often depicted as twin genies as seen here, where it's a mirror image of the man. And Tararet. Tararet is the goddess of the river. She's called the demon wife of Apep, who was an Egyptian god of evil. Her form was a bipedal female hippopotamus with feline attributes and the back of a Nile crocodile. She sometimes bears the epithet Lady of Heaven and Mistress of the Horizon. She was known to be a goddess of motherhood and protector of pregnancy. And Nu, the god of the rivers and the abyss. He is depicted as a bearded blue-green man, blue-green for water, green for rebirth. These were the colors associated by the Egyptians. He was sometimes depicted as a man with a frog's head, or sometimes just a frog, or a snake-headed woman named Nanet. And Nu means abyss. And Osiris, and some of these you'll see overlap in other places, but Osiris was called the giver of life. The Egyptians depicted him as a crowned man and green skin to represent rebirth. And it's said of him that the Nile is in his bloodstream. He became an Egyptian god of the dead and husband to another goddess named Isis. With Amun-Ra, he's one of the most recorded Egyptian deities. There's more writings on him along with Amun-Ra, or just sometimes shortened to Ra, the sun god, the mighty god of Egypt, together. But with all of these false gods had no power to overturn the judgment by God. In fact, it lasted a week. In Exodus 7, verse 22, it says, "But the magicians of Egypt did the same with their secret arts, and Pharaoh's heart was hardened, and he did not listen to them as the Lord had said." I want you to notice that while his magicians could duplicate water to blood, they couldn't cure it. What would be the bigger trick to turn Pharaoh's heart? Get rid of it. He didn't need more blood. It was killing the fish. They couldn't drink it. But he saw his magicians do it and said, "Oh, well, see, I don't need to listen to Jehovah. I don't need to listen to Yahweh. I don't need to listen to Moses." It would have been a better trick if his magicians could get rid of it, right? But they couldn't. They might be able to duplicate it with their tricks. Maybe I was telling Alana, maybe they had these pockets full of these deep pockets and these red dye and powder that they could sprinkle on the water and make it look like it turned to blood. However they did it, it swayed Pharaoh against Moses. Despite all this, a week of undrinkable water, Pharaoh hardened his heart and the next plague began. The second plague was frogs. Now frogs were not uncommon to Egypt, particularly near the Nile. But they didn't normally cover the land of Egypt, as it says in Exodus 8 and verse 6. Egyptians held frogs as sacred. And they even helped conserve frogs. They had frog farms. Frogs were a commodity that were traded because of how sacred they were. And they didn't eat them. Oh no, you couldn't eat them. Because of the god Heket, whose form was a frog. She's a goddess of life and fertility. She's considered a daughter of Ra. Her form was a frog or a frog-headed woman. She's considered the goddess of the Nile flooding. Again, not the flood itself, that was happy, but the life that it brought when it flooded. Therefore, she was a fertility goddess. She assisted women in childbirth. Imagine Exodus 8, verse 3, when it says the frogs were in their beds. Even the image of her was in their beds. And because of her form, frogs were sacred. And here's the interesting thing I found. Even the involuntary slaughter of a frog in Egypt was punishable by death. If you killed a frog, it was death. Even accidentally, because it was her form, her sacred image. And now I want you to picture with me the Egyptians having to gather the dead bodies of frogs and throw them into heaps. Just imagine what that did to their psyche. That to have a dead frog meant someone's life was in danger if they had killed that frog. And now their land is surrounded with them. And it's different than the other plagues we're going to see. God will drive the flies and the gnats away and the locusts, but not the frogs. He killed them where they lied. And the Egyptians had to clean it up. I want you to think about what that did to their mental and emotional psyche. The sacred going to something foul, to the point that Pharaoh was begging Moses to get rid of them. The false god Heket had no power to overturn God's judgment. Pharaoh's magi duplicated the trick. Exodus 8:7. The magicians did the same with their secret arts, making frogs come up on the land of Egypt. Did the land of Egypt need more frogs? No. They couldn't cure it. They could do it, whether they had frogs in their pockets or up their sleeves or who knows how they did it, but the land didn't need more frogs. That shouldn't have been the trick that swayed Pharaoh's heart against Moses. What should have done it is if the Magi had the ability to get rid of those frogs. Because notice, when Pharaoh wants them gone, he doesn't pray to Heket. He doesn't call in the priests to Heket. He calls in Moses and begs him to entreat God on his behalf to get rid of the frogs. And in fact, God gives Pharaoh the honor, Moses says. He gives him the honor to name the time to end the plague. And Pharaoh says, tomorrow. So Moses says, God will do what Pharaoh says tomorrow. He'll let the people go. And the frogs will be taken care of. However, God kills the frog, but the Egyptians have to get rid of them. They have to sweep them out of their homes. It was in the beds of the kings. In Psalm 105 and verse 30. It says, their land swarmed with frogs, even in the chambers of their kings. No one was immune to the swarm of frogs on the land. But despite all this, Pharaoh hardened his heart, and the next plague began. The third plague were gnats, or lice, depending on your version. Exodus 8, 16 and 19. Psalm 105, 31. Says he spoke, and there came a swarm of flies and gnats in all their territory. Kind of combines these two. But the third plague is gnats or lice. It comes from a Hebrew word kin that means to dig and refers to lice or gnats, but always plural. This word is translated as gnats by the English Standard Version and the New American Standard, lice in the King James and New King James. Whether it's gnats or lice, gnats or lice, the word there means to dig. It gives you the idea of what they're doing. They're burrowing into the people's hair and their skins, their robes. They can't get rid of them. This was absolute judgment on the false god Geb. The Egyptian god Geb was called the great god of the earth. He was considered the god of the dust of the earth. Where did the gnats or the lice come from? The very dust of the earth. God brought them forth. His form was a bearded man or a snakehead. He's said to be the god of earth fertility and usually depicted as one half of a circle with his wife Nut forming the other half under her arch. And there's myths. You might wonder, why is there a bird on his head? It's actually a goose. To me, it looked like a duck, but it's a goose. The myth said he laid a cosmic goose egg from which sprang the sun and the whole world. And so the goose was associated as his holy symbol, and it was not considered generally sacred or holy, not like the frog. They didn't consider the goose sacred or holy. It was just his holy symbol. But here's the thing. His priests had to shave their heads every day. His priests had to shave their bodies every other day, lest they get lice. In fact, unlike the other priests of Egypt, who must have wore nice embroidered robes, his priests were known to wear the most earthy, simple tunics. They had no pockets, they had no collars, they had no embroidery, lest there be any place on their tunics that lice could embed itself. So his priests would be the most simple and basic of the Egyptian priests. And imagine the horror of being covered in lice despite all their precautions. I want you to think about, again, the mental anguish that these people had in this plague. This was judgment that the false god Geb could not overturn. In fact, in Exodus 8, 18 and 19, it says, the magicians tried with their secret arts to bring forth gnats, but they could not. So there were gnats on man and beast. Then the magician said to Pharaoh, this is the finger of God. But Pharaoh's heart was hardened, and he did not listen to them, as the Lord had said. God told Moses, he's going to harden his heart, so I can execute these judgments upon him. So despite all this, Pharaoh hardened his heart, and the next plague began. The fourth plague, flies. Psalm 105:31, as we read earlier, he called the gnats and flies to swarm the land. This is from a Hebrew word that says swarms, all manner of swarms of flies or even mosquitoes. This word is often translated as fly or mosquito. But now it's different. The first three plagues affected the entire land. That would include the land of Goshen where the Israelites lived. So the Israelites had no drinkable water. The Israelites suffered the frogs. The Israelites suffered the gnats and the lice. But now God is telling Pharaoh something different is going to happen with this plague. Goshen, where the Israelites lived, would be unaffected. So God would demonstrate to Pharaoh that he has absolute control, absolute power. And that the Israelites are going to see he is God. Remember Moses at the burning bush asked God, "What should I tell them sent me? Who should I tell them sent me? I'm going to go and say I'm representing the God of your forefathers." And they're going to ask me, "Well, who is he?" And God says, "You tell them I am sent you." And he tells Moses he's going to demonstrate himself to them the way their forefathers never saw. The Israelites are seeing what the Egyptians are seeing. There is one God, and beside him there is no other. They've been 400 or so years in the land, inundated with this Egyptian mythology. And God is cutting right through it saying, "I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And when I said I'm bringing you out, it's time, and I'm bringing you out." So God says, "I'm going to make a distinction. The land of Goshen is not going to be affected by the flies." This was judgment against Amun-Ra himself. Amun-Ra, sometimes shortened to Ra, the sun god, was called the great god and creator of all. The Egyptians revered Ra above all other deities. His form was sometimes depicted as a crowned man or a man with a falcon's head. If you trace the mythology of Amun-Ra down through the lineage, you find that there were some Greeks that came into Egypt and were so impressed with what they read about Amun-Ra, they took it back to their own land, and you guessed it, Zeus was born. The Greeks created gods in their own image, and Zeus was their representation of Amun-Ra. That's how popular he was. He lived on through the Romans, beyond Zeus as Jupiter. Amun-Ra was a god that the people worshipped. His myths are he's self-created, like Atum, who is also a sun god. With Osiris, he's the most widely recorded Egyptian deity. He was said to be the god of mercy, to which people suffering due to their own mistakes or the mistakes of others called to for mercy and deliverance. And yet we're going to find that Pharaoh does not call out to Ra to get rid of the flies. He's going to call to Moses to call out to God on his behalf. Why didn't he bring the priests of Ra? You know, they're waiting in the wings. "Oh, this is our time." No, they're not. They're covered in flies like everyone else, wondering why Ra isn't delivering them. The reason I say this is a judgment on Ra was he was pictured as a scarab pushing the sun across the sky. Scarabs are dung beetles, and they push great amounts of dung in front of them. They live up to their name. Therefore, the scarab, in all its forms, even flies, was sacred. Again, this creature that God is using for this plague was one of their sacred animals. There's pictures of and relics and sculptures of scarabs and flies that adorn their temples and adorn their tombs. And if you go to a museum, you can still see some of those things that have been captured throughout time. It was used in everything from funerals, weddings, to religious ceremonies, and in their art. And yet, Pharaoh's going to beg Moses to get rid of the flies, the sacred object that's used in all these different things. And Khepri. Khepri means come into being or create. His form is a scarab-faced god, or depicted as just a scarab, or a scarab with a human male head coming forth from the shell. The scarab amulets that the Egyptians wore as jewelry represented Khepri, the god of being. He represents the rising or morning sun. By extension, he represents creation, the renewal of life. Khepri and another solar deity we'll talk about later, Atum, they were seen as two different aspects of Ra. It's said that Khepri was the morning sun, Ra was the midday sun, and Atum was the sun in the evening, or the evening sun. The false god Ra and Khepri, though both worshipped as creator gods, could not stop or overturn the judgment. But we find in Exodus 8, 25 and 31, Pharaoh did not appeal to Ra, but to God. And in these passages, he broke for the first time saying the Israelites could leave, but then changed his mind. And despite all this, Pharaoh hardened his heart, and the next plague began. And we talk about the fifth plague. The livestock get sick with pestilence, and then they die. Exodus 9:1-7. The livestock which are in the field, on the horses, on the donkeys, on the camels, on the herds, and on the flocks would die from Exodus 9:3. Except, but of the livestock of the sons of Israel, not one died, Exodus 9:6 says. God again makes a distinction. I'm going to put these plagues on the Egyptians, but not my people. Why do you think that was, that God separated Israel out, especially for this plague? If you remember, Moses was sent to Pharaoh saying, let my people go. God's people need to go 3 days' journey into the wilderness and sacrifice to God. If they're going to sacrifice to God, what do they need? Sacrifices. God's not going to kill their livestock. They're going to need it because they're supposed to go in the wilderness and sacrifice to God. But the Egyptians, on the other hand, God's going to tell them what he thinks of their gods that represent cattle and livestock, especially one in particular. But this is a judgment on Hathor. Hathor was called the goddess of love, motherhood, and joy. Her form is a cow or a woman with a cow's horns holding up a sun disc, as depicted here. More festivals were given in her honor than any other Egyptian deity. More children were named after her than any other. She was popular with both men and women, because both men and women could serve as her priests. She made no distinction. And so she was popular among the populace of both men and women. Along with Nut, she was goddess of the Milky Way. She was goddess of joy. She was revered by women for her multifaceted roles of wife, lover, and mother. She was considered the wife of Amun-Ra, according to some mythology stories. But here's one of my favorite readings. Is Apis the bull god. He is called the renewal of life. He was called a son of Hathor. So I put Hathor first. His horns also held up a sun disc, as you can see depicted here of someone praying to Apis the bull god. His horns have a sun disc in between. He was considered a funerary god with much importance to peasants and royalty alike. So he too was very popular with the people. Because at a peasant's funeral, as a nobody in Egypt, they still got the honorary honors of the priests of Apis coming to their funerals and holding rites. But unlike these other gods, unlike the other gods that exist in drawings and in symbols and these different things, Apis has a physical manifestation. It was known as the Apis bull. They would search the land high and low for this bull, and I'll give you the criteria for that in just a second. But when the Apis bull died, the land mourned. And some have suggested from Exodus 32, he may have been the influence for the golden calf. The Israelites would have seen this time and time again. Cow deities represented a king, or in this case Pharaoh, who became a deity after death. After an Apis bull died, another one was searched out. And I want you to listen to this. It had to be a black bull calf with a white triangle on its forehead, with a white crescent moon on its right flank, a scarab mark under its tongue, and double hairs on its tail. Egyptian farmers and livestock keepers throughout the land would search high and low. They would search every calf born to find out, is it a black calf? Does it have these four markings? Because the Egyptian government would pile honor upon honor on the farmer that produced the next Apis bull. The Apis bull died in this plague. God killed their livestock. And not only did the Apis bull die, but I want you to think about what this had on their psyche. Imagine the strain on the people's mental ability to know that they could not replace the Apis bull. Because God wipes out any successor chance he had. God's wiping out their livestock. They all die of this pestilence. Once this Apis bull was selected, they brought it to the temple of Ptah. He's given a window room in the palace and given a harem of cows and is worshipped. It was said of the Apis bull, he had a healing breath. People lined the streets to the temple of Ptah to have this bull breathe on them as he would have this morning walk to the temple. Apis would have been killed and all his possible successors. These gods could not stop the slaughter of all the livestock in Egypt. In fact, in Exodus 9:7, Pharaoh sent, and behold, there was not even one of the livestock of Israel dead. But the heart of Pharaoh was hardened, and he did not let the people go. Pharaoh was so shocked at the devastation here that he even sends some scout or a spy into the land of Goshen to actually tell him, did God spare the livestock of Israel? And he comes back and says, yes. All our livestock is suffering, but the livestock in Goshen is alive and well. So despite all this, Pharaoh hardened his heart and the next plague began. The sixth plague was boils. This affliction affected man and beast alike from Exodus 9, 8 to 12. This is the first plague to affect the human body directly. Oh, he bothered them with frogs. He bothered them with lice and gnats and flies. But this is the first plague to direct the body directly. Again, God makes a distinction between the Israelites and Egyptians. Reading about these boils brought back some memory of studying the Black Death that had spread over Europe in the 1300s. During the Black Death that swept through Europe and the Near East, it killed an estimated 75 to 200 million people from AD 1346 to 1353. One of the very first symptoms noted with it was severe boils covering the body. That the skin would turn red, purple, and black. It would be decayed and smelled foul, accompanied with high fever and delirium. And then death occurred within 5 to 7 days. God here strikes the Egyptians with severe boils. This was against the false gods of healing. Isis, the goddess of fertility and life. She was a goddess of health. She's a throne-crowned woman. Her maternal aid was invoked in healing spells to benefit ordinary people, not just royalty, making her very popular. And Imhotep, the god of medicine and healing. He was a real guy that lived a long, long time ago in the 3rd dynasty. He was an advisor to Pharaoh Djoser of the 3rd dynasty. He was one of the earliest names found in ancient Egypt, and because of his advances in engineering, architecture, and medicine, he was later deified and joined the pantheon of Egypt's gods. And Thoth, he's called the healer of the gods. His form is a man with the head of an ibis, that is a curved-billed bird, or a baboon, depending on the artist's intent. Here is the ibis rather than the baboon. He was called the heart and tongue of Ra. So he was kind of Ra's spokesman. But he was called the healer of the gods. And in fact, the 18th dynasty includes kings with two names, Thutmosis and Amenhotep. Amenhotep is from Amun-Ra. It means Amun is satisfied. Thutmosis is from this god, Thoth. And it means Thoth is born. So as you read history and you read through the 18th dynasty of Egypt, and you read of Thutmosis the first, then the second, and the third, and Amenhotep, Thutmosis comes from this god. Thoth means Thoth is born. But these false gods could not heal or overturn God's judgment. In fact, Exodus 9:11 says the magicians could not stand before Moses because of the boils. For the boils were on the magicians as well as on all the Egyptians, but not the Israelites. And despite all this, Pharaoh hardened his heart and the next plague began. Hail and fire is the seventh plague. From Exodus 9, 13 through 35, we're told in verses 23 to 24 that hail fell and fire flashed continually in the hail. In Psalm 78, verse 48, it's called bolts of lightning. But here it's referred to as fire flashing among the hail. In fact, Psalm 105, 32 to 33 reads, he gave them hail for rain and flaming fire in their land. He struck down their vines also in their fig trees, and shattered the trees of their territory. This was devastating. In fact, he's going to go on to tell them as he gives Pharaoh warning about this. He says his judgments in Exodus 9:14 were to show that he is the one true God. He gives them warning and says, and they were told in Exodus 9:20 through 21, that the Egyptians that feared him pulled their servants out of the field into their houses. They pulled their livestock, whatever was left after the pestilence. They pulled them indoors. And they did not die by the hail. But all those, including Pharaoh, who left their servants and their livestock in the fields, were killed by the hail. The land of Goshen would be spared, but Egypt's crops were destroyed. In Exodus 9, 31 to 32, One of the rare times we're going to read in Exodus. In Exodus chapter 9, 31 to 32, I want you to see what it says about this hail. And Moses gives Pharaoh warning and tells him that this is going to be a hailstorm unlike anything they've ever seen from the foundation of their country. He says in verse 18, "Behold, about this time tomorrow, I will send a very heavy hail, such as not been seen in Egypt from the day it was founded until now." And then he tells him, "Bring your livestock in. Don't leave it outdoors, because if you do, it's going to die." And then verse 31, "Now the flax and the barley were ruined, for the barley was in the ear and the flax was in bud. But the wheat and the spelt were not ruined, for they ripened late." The interesting thing about this is looking at Egypt's crops, the flax and barley blossom in February to March in Egypt. So it gives us kind of a time frame of when this was happening. There was harvest happening. They're going to be celebrating and calling out to the gods of harvest. But not on this day. Their crops are going to be ruined. This plague affected the agriculture of the land as well as their livestock. Whatever did not die from the plague being left from the pestilence on the livestock is going to die in this plague. This was judgment against the false god of the sky and crops, Nut, the sky goddess, one of the oldest of Egypt's pantheon. Her form is a woman arched over the earth. She's sometimes depicted as a cow like Hathor, usually depicted as one half of a circle with her husband Geb forming the other half arched over him. She was considered protector of the dead as they traveled to the afterlife. And Shu, god of the air and wind, her form, or his form, is a crowned man. He's the father of Geb, that's the earth god, and Nut, the sky god we just looked at. He carries an Ankh. Almost all of these deities carry an Ankh. That's that little cross thing with a circle on the top. It's a symbol for life that most of the gods carry. And Horus, the god of the sky, god of war, and god of protection. He's a hawk-headed man, or sometimes just a hawk. He could not protect the crops. There are so many different myths referring to him, and the outline and is on the website. And I encourage you to read that, as there's a lot of information that we're not going to cover tonight. But the point is, these false gods could not protect the land or the animals or overturn God's judgment. In Exodus 9, 27 to 28, "Then Pharaoh sent for Moses and Aaron and said to them, 'I have sinned this time.'" He's recognizing wrong. "The Lord is the righteous one, and I and my people are the wicked ones. Make supplication to the Lord, for there's been enough of God's thunder and hail, and I will let you go, and you shall stay no longer." He did not call out to the gods of the sky or the gods of the crops. He tells Moses that he sinned and to entreat to God on his behalf. But he changes his mind when the hail and its thunder and its fire stops. So Pharaoh hardens his heart, and the next plague begins. God sends locusts. Whatever the hail did not get, Exodus 10, 1 to 20, the locusts are going to take care of. Over in Psalm 105, 34 to 35 says, "He spoke, and locusts came, and young locusts, even without number, and ate up all vegetation in their land, and ate up the fruit of their ground." Whatever was left of the harvest that the hail did not crush to death, the locusts are going to eat it up. In Exodus 10, 4 to 6, we're told the locusts are going to be something never seen before. And says there it's going to be told for generations. And in fact, in Exodus chapter 10, verse 7, Pharaoh's servant said, "Egypt is destroyed." They're going to tell him, "Why don't you relent? Let them go. Can't you see? Egypt is destroyed." And this plague would be one for the history books. It'd be told to the Israelites for generations, reminding them of God's power, going back to Exodus 10, 1 to 2. But this plague would be unlike anything the Egyptians had ever seen. This was judgment on the false gods of grain and harvest. Renenutet, the goddess of nourishment and harvest. She's sometimes depicted as a cobra, or in this case, a woman with the head of a cobra. She was a nurse goddess, so that she was called a goddess of nourishment. She's depicted as the wife of Geb, that was that earth god. And Nepher, or Nepri, the god of grain, he was called the Lord of Mouth, the Lord of the Mouth. His form was a nursing child. He was dotted to represent grain, and he represented the annual harvest. This would be his time of year that they would be calling out to Nepri, the Lord of the Mouth, for the grain that they were getting. But not with the hail and the locusts this day. And Seth, the god of the desert, he's also called protector of crops. He's a son of the sky goddess Nut. And his form is a made-up creature. He has many characteristics of different animal heads, all depending on the artist's intent. The barley and flax are in bloom. These gods would be worshipped at this time as they were the gods of grain and harvest. And yet these false gods could not stop or overturn God's judgment. It says in Exodus 10, 16 to 17, "Then Pharaoh hurriedly called for Moses and Aaron." Again, not the priests. Not the priests of these gods that we looked at. He calls for Moses and Aaron and he says, "I've sinned against the Lord your God and against you." Again, a second time he says, "I have sinned," but his words ring hollow. "Now therefore, please forgive my sin only this once and make supplication to the Lord your God that he would only remove this death from me." So God does. From Moses entreating God, God removes the locusts. And Pharaoh changes his mind. He hardens his heart. And the next plague began. But Pharaoh offered Moses a compromise in Exodus 10, 8 to 11. He says Moses could take the men. You take the men out in the wilderness, but you leave the women and children behind. That way he's got collateral. Moses has to come back. Moses said, no, it's all or nothing. So Pharaoh changes his mind, hardens his heart, and the next plague begins. The ninth plague, darkness. Exodus 10, 21 to 29, complete darkness. Psalm 105, verse 28 says, "He sent darkness and made it dark, and they did not rebel against his words." The plague of darkness was an insult to Egypt's religion and their entire culture. They were called the land of light. 3 days of complete darkness, which may be felt. Exodus 10, verse 21. And it implies that they couldn't even light candles or torches, because it says in Exodus chapter 10, verse 23, that only in the land of Goshen were the Israelites had lights in their dwellings. The Israelites had lights in their dwellings. And it says because of this oppressive darkness, the Egyptians didn't get out of their beds. They couldn't see anything in front of them. They couldn't move around. So for 3 days they did nothing. Remember, this is the time of harvest. There's a lot of work to be done. But not today. Not for these 3 days. It was a darkness to be felt. And I'm going to go through these quick because many of these we've already seen. Amun-Ra, the great god, creator of all, he was called the sun god. Remember, Khepri was the morning sun, Ra was the midday sun, and Atum was the sun in the evening. So we look at Ptah. Ptah is said that he created the sun, moon, and the earth, and the stars. His form is a mummified bearded man with green skin for rebirth. He's manifested in the Apis bull. It's his temple the Apis bull gets taken to and lives out its life in luxury and worshipped as a god. And Atum. He's called the Complete One. His form is a form of Pharaoh and carries the symbols for Upper and Lower Egypt and a cross for eternal life. Again, he said he is the evening sun. He said, like Ra, to be a self-created god. And it said he created the first humans. And in some myths, he's the first Egyptian god of their entire pantheon. And yet, these false gods could not overturn God's judgment and bring back the light. God demonstrated his mighty power over Egypt's most mightiest of gods, Ra, the sun god. So we read in Exodus 10:24, it says, "Pharaoh relented and told Moses to take everyone out of his land, even his little ones, but not their flocks." Again, collateral. "You go. Go your 3 days' journey. Take even the little ones and the women. Take everybody, but you're leaving your flocks." Now, why do you think Egypt wants to keep their flocks? Do you think those flocks are going to be there when Israel gets back? No. Because Egypt has nothing. They don't have any livestock. So he says, "You leave your livestock." Moses says, "No, what are we going to sacrifice with? It's all or nothing." So Pharaoh gets angry and tells Moses to never see his face again or he would die. He hardens his heart and the next plague began. The tenth plague, death of the firstborn. It really begins in Exodus 11 verse 1 and runs all the way through the end of chapter 12. In Psalm 105, verse 36, it says, "He also struck down all the firstborn in their land, the firstfruits of all their vigor." You know, a lot of people look at these plagues and they try to explain them away with natural occurrence. I've heard it said this was a childhood epidemic that because of hygiene and other issues, it must have only happened in Egypt. No, this is not a childhood epidemic. Only the Egyptians and animals firstborn were killed. The Israelites, this is the first time they're called upon by God to do something. We all remember the Passover is established here because that angel of death from God is going to pass over the land of Goshen. But the angel of death does go into Goshen. The other plagues, when God says, I'm making a distinction between Israel and Egypt, it's because of His covenant with Abraham that He spares them. But this time He tells Israel, slaughter that Passover lamb and put its blood over the doorposts. If it is not, and that angel of death passes over, the firstborn in that house is going to die. So the Israelites, by their obedience, the Passover instituted in Exodus chapter 12, were told that no Israelite lost their firstborn. This is an amazing thing to me. How many times in their history can we read that the Israelites to a man obeyed God? And yet here they did. They've seen what God can do. And when God says, put that blood of the lamb over your doorpost to protect your children, they did it. Because God says He's going to cause a wailing that the Egyptians have never seen before. The loss of the firstborn of Egypt would cripple their families emotionally, and is perhaps the most devastating of the plagues. Livestock and crops can be replaced, but their family? No. Pharaoh in Exodus 1 ordered the deaths of all the Israelite males. And now God is going to execute all the firstborn of Egypt. It's interesting that we never see it say the firstborn of the children. The closest we get is it says that the firstborn of Pharaoh and even the captive in the dungeon was killed. It's the closest allusion that we have to children, but it makes you believe that all the firstborn were killed. I was telling Alana that means in our family, it'd be me and her. Alana and Drayson, or Drayson and Becky would be left. Think about that in your families. If this plague went over your family, who would be left standing? Who would you lose? We're told that not one house in Egypt was unaffected. Every house had death because God took the firstborn. This was in judgment against their false gods, and way too many to name them all. Pharaoh, considered a god, his manifestation is he looks like Atum or Amun-Ra. Amun-Ra, the great god and creator of all. Osiris, as we talked about him, the giver of life. Isis is one that I said we would talk about later. She's the goddess of fertility and life. She's a throne-crowned woman. She is known as the goddess of simplicity, protector of the dead, and goddess of children from whom all beginnings arose. And yet she could not protect the firstborn of Egypt. And Wajet, he's the protector of Pharaoh. She's a goddess. She's a snake-headed woman or a snake, usually an Egyptian cobra. Later, she's depicted as a woman with the head of a vulture. But as a cobra, she's the cobra on the headdress of Pharaoh's crown. She's that serpent that sticks out. She was the protector of Pharaoh. And she had the responsibility as the protector of not only Pharaoh, but his family. She couldn't do anything about this plague. And Num, as we talked about earlier, is the guardian of the Nile. He's sometimes called the ram god, created children on a potter's wheel. Here's the ram's head versus the Passover lamb. One could not stop the death of children while the other saved children from their obedience to God, with the Passover being established by the power of God. These false gods could not save their children, could not save their firstborn, even with advanced warning. We can read in Exodus 12, 29 to 33 that Pharaoh and all the people of Egypt urged the Israelites to leave. This was the final straw. You can only imagine the wailing and the crying that next morning. Again, my family would be halved. What about your family? Despite even this, Pharaoh hardened his heart. And the deliverance at the Red Sea would be the final straw that would divide Israel and Egypt for good. In Exodus chapter 14. We can look in Numbers chapter 33 and 3 through 4. And says, as the Egyptians were burying their dead. I actually wanted to read it. Numbers 33 starting in verse 3. They journeyed from Ramses in the first month on the 15th day of the first month. On the next day after the Passover, the sons of Israel started out boldly and went in the sight of all the Egyptians. While the Egyptians were burying all their firstborn whom the Lord had struck down among them, the Lord had also executed judgments on their gods. These weren't natural occurrences. This was God executing judgment on their pantheon of false gods. Pharaoh told Moses in Exodus 5:2, I do not know the Lord. But Pharaoh said, "Who is the Lord that I should obey His voice to let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, and besides, I will not let Israel go." Exodus 9:14, we're told God said this, "For this time I will send all my plagues on you and your servants and your people, so that you may know that there is no one like me in all the earth." Pharaoh says, "I don't know who He is." God says, "He's going to know by the end of this. By the end of this, you're going to know me, you're going to know my power, and you're going to know there's no one like me." God showed him in all of Egypt, and I would add, even Israel, that there is none besides Yahweh. He is God Almighty. In Psalm 105, 37 to 38, it says, "Then He brought them out with silver and gold, and among His tribes there is not one who stumbled. Egypt was glad when they departed, for the dread of them had fallen upon them." The Egyptians let them take their gold, their silver, their plunder, and said, "Just get out of the land," as they took the time to bury their dead. No matter what we believe or believe in, if it's not in God and in His truth, He can destroy it. For He has all control and authority over His creation. Philippians 2, 9-11 says, "Every knee will bow." I want to point out, Jesus is our Passover lamb. As the Passover was instituted, Numbers chapter 3, verse 13 tells us that from the 10th plague, God sanctified all the firstborn of Israel, man and beast. As He took the lives of the firstborn of the Egyptians, man and beast, He sanctified to Himself forever the firstborn of Israel, man and beast. And in 1 Corinthians 5:7, we read Christ is our Passover lamb. And Ephesians 1:7 tells us in His blood we are redeemed. We have forgiveness of sins. And in Hebrews chapter 10, verse 10 and verse 14, we're told that in His body on the cross, in His sacrifice, we are sanctified. Just as the Passover sanctified the Israelites, through Jesus' sacrifice, that Passover lamb, one sacrifice for all time, we are sanctified. Let us love and serve the one and only God, the Creator of the heavens and the earth. In a minute, we're going to sing, "Lord, I Believe." If you, like Egypt and Israel of old, believe, won't you obey the gospel and be saved tonight? You can be forgiven of your sins by rising from the waters of baptism, walking in newness of life. If you have not lived the way that you should, you can be forgiven of those sins as well and be renewed. And if we can assist you in anything tonight, come forward and let it be known now, while together we stand and sing.